Good morning, and welcome to Enlightened Radio at enlightenedradio.org, and also available online pretty much full time. A few breaks occasionally at player.enlightenedradio.org. This morning's show is the Poetry Show with my good friend and host Janet Harrison, and today, at kind of at my request, we're starting our recording a little bit early, at her request, but at my request, indulging some of my favorite poems from the anti-fascist, I would guess that's the best way to call it, era in the build-up to World War II, in which Americans participated in brigades organized by state who volunteered to go to Spain and defend the Spanish Republic against the alliance between the Francisco Franco and Hitler in the Axis alliance in Europe. So anyway, the poems from that area have always kind of been inspired to me, and I knew at least one person who was very closely related to them, and I always liked him, and he was part of one of the Lincoln brigades that went over. So it sort of have a special place in my heart. Anyway, I think the first one we're going to start with here this morning is Langston Hughes. And he was himself a volunteer in Spain. And I hadn't even known that before I revisited, this poem. I knew that he had been very tight with them, but actually he was in Spain. My wife and I just returned from a wonderful cruise along the Spanish Mediterranean coast, about which a number of items in this poem and some of the other poems we'll hear today, names of towns and areas and provinces and languages spoken in Spain. If some of the pronunciations sound a little off, well, we're doing our best to try to keep the spirit of the poems. All right, so this one that I'm going to start with is a letter from Spain by Langston Hughes, addressed to the Alabama Lincoln Battalion International Brigades, November something, 1937. Dear brother at home, we captured a wounded Moor today. He was just as dark as me. I said, boy, what are you doing here, fighting against the free? He answered something in a language I couldn't understand, but something told me he was saying they nabbed him in his land and made him join the fascist army and come across to Spain. And he said he had a feeling that he'd never get back home again. He said he had a feeling this whole thing wasn't right. He said he didn't know the folks he had to fight. And as he lay there dying in a village we had taken, I looked across to Africa and seed foundation shaken. Because if a free Spain wins this war, the colonies too are free. Then something wonderful could happen to them Moors as dark as me. I guess that's why old England, and I reckon Italy too, is afraid to let a worker Spain be too good to me and you. Because they got slaves in Africa, and they don't want them to be free. Listen, Moorish prisoner. Hell, here, shake hands with me. I knelt down there beside him, and I took his hand. But the wounded Moor was dying, and he didn't understand. Salute, Johnny. Anyway, that's a Langston Hughes poem. Gives you some feel for the participation in that conflict at that early stage. Folks who had a good sense of what was coming. And in some ways, the fate of the Spanish Republic, which was overwhelmed by German-assisted Franco forces, did actually spell the onset of a much bigger conflict. That's a good opening today for just a combination of me and my wife been to Spain, and two, we've been thinking about almost a sort of subculture of anti-fascist culture that ended up being an important component of the Second World War. All right, Janet, what's up next?
Well, I thought we'd go to Bertolt Brecht's The Book Burning. Okay. I love this poem, and I think I just want to have a comment about it when I finish reading it. Right. The Book Burning. When the regime ordered that books with corrupt knowledge be publicly burned, and from all quarters oxen were forced to pull carts of books to the burning fires, a cast-out poet, one of the best, appalled, found that his books had been forgotten. He hurried to his writing table, anger in his sails, and wrote a letter to those in power. "Burn me," he wrote with a vaulting pen. "Burn me. Don't do this to me. Don't exclude me. Haven't I always told the truth of my books? And now you've treated me as if I were a liar. I am ordering you to burn me."
Right. Right. Yeah, Brecht always gets to the point, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, he gets to the point very quickly. I never knew anybody who could write a better political poem than him.
True.
You know, and it almost didn't matter. Somehow the distinction between, you know, the political statement and the cultural statement was just blurred, you know, or just a single thing, you know, and you stop worrying about it.
I was thinking about how you could translate this poem into contemporary times in this country. And instead of "why haven't you burnt my books, why haven't you banned my books?"
Oh, yes, right, exactly. You know, why haven't you burnt? Hey, wait,
so it's
come
very,
on.
Yeah, this poem was written in 1938, but it still resonates. It still has power.
Oh, it's
almost 100 years later.
Yeah, it's a humdinger. I there's a whole lot of poetry and actually a couple of plays that he wrote during that time that he didn't get very far from the theme. he had to get out of Germany though, like a lot of others. I wonder. Anyway. I like that. What's a good one to go next with?
Well, there's two more Brecht poems, but there's also that beautiful poem by Pablo Neruda. I'll explain some things if you want to read that. Yeah, that full life poem. That's a very powerful poem.
Let's do that one. Since that's right on the topic here, let me see if I can. Actually, your link is better because you're right. Mine was cut off. Hold on a second. Let me just get back to that. Yeah, here it is. Okay.
It's called I'm Explaining a Few Things. And I do believe that this poem was written while he was in Spain. And in the midst of the Republican conflict at some level, I'm not sure exactly which years that he was there, but anyway, maybe he'll let us know in what follows. This is called I'm Explaining a Few Things. And if you're not that well read or haven't delved into Pablo Neruda's poetry before, then you've missed a feast that is difficult to equal anywhere in the world. And there are wonderful translations out also of his work. He's one of the poets that somehow manages to survive translation the best. I mean, there's some others too, but he's extraordinary. And
the Chilean poet.
The Chilean poet, yes, Pablo Neruda. So anyway, this is you'll get the taste of the beauty of his language. I'm explaining a few things. You're going to ask, where are the lilacs and the poppy-petaled metaphysics and the rain repeatedly spattering its words and drilling them full of apertures and birds? I'll tell you the news. I lived in a suburb of Madrid, with bells and clocks and trees. From there, you could look out over Castile's dry face, a leather ocean. My house was called the House of Flowers, because in every cranny, geraniums burst. It was a good-looking house with its dogs and children. Remember, Ro? Yeah, Rafael. Federico, do you remember? From under the ground, where the light of June drowned flowers in your mouth. Brother, my brother. Everything loud with big voices, the salt of merchandises, pileups of palpitating bread. The stalls of my suburb of Argyll with its statue, like a drained inkwell and a swirl of hake. Oil flowed into spoons. A deep baying of feet and hands swelled in the streets. Meters, liters, the sharp measure of life. Stacked up fish, the texture of roofs and a cold sun in which to weather vain falters. The fine frenzied ivory of potatoes. Wave on wave of tomatoes rolling down to the sea. And one morning, all that was burning. One morning, the bonfires leapt out of the earth, devouring human beings. And from then on, fire, gunpowder from then on, and from then on, blood. Bandits with planes and Moors, bandits with finger rings and duchesses, bandits with black friars spattering blessings came through the sky to kill children. And the blood of children ran through the streets without fuss, like children's blood. Jackals that the jackals would despise, stories that the dry thistle would bite on and spit out, vipers that the vipers would abominate. Face to face with you, I have seen the blood of Spain tower like a tide to drown you in one wave of pride and knives. Treacherous generals, see my dead house. Look at broken Spain. From every house, burning metal flows instead of flowers. Every socket of Spain, Spain emerges. And from every dead child, a rifle with eyes. And from every crime, bullets are bomb, which are one day fine, the bullseye. your hearts. And you will ask, why doesn't his poetry speak of dreams and leaves the great volcanoes of his native land? Come and see the blood in the streets. Come and see the blood in the streets. Come and see the blood in the streets. Wow. A few things explained.
At the end is so powerful.
It's you know, when I read Nunrut, my latest, global slogan is ceasefire everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think these poems, you know, like just help me feel that it's time to. There's got to be conditions for ceasefire on every side at some point. Why not? You know what I mean? Let's stop shooting, and then, you know. So what if we have to talk 10 years to find an agreement? Just keep talking, you know, right?
And yeah, that's I was teaching first day school once, and the kids I was supervising got in a squabble, and one of them came up to me and looked at me and said, he hit me back first. And I think that's where the world's at now. Everybody's screaming, he hit me back first.
That's right. You know, there was the hit. Yeah, I know which hit was that. Right. Oh, man. That poem is really, I'm sure that would be banned some places now. Anyway, well, and I think there's now been Chile has said that the evidence somehow that they didn't was that he was in fact murdered by the.
Yeah, there's a beautiful story about him when the generals came to search his estate at Isla Negra.
Yeah,
and It might be an apocryphal story, but apparently they searched all over and they came to him finally and said, I'm sorry, you know, for the intrusion. We had been told there was something dangerous here. And he said, there is poetry.
That's right. Well, that's a dangerous poem. You know, that sure is. Okay. Well, my dear, so let's see what.
I'll take an attempt to read The Winds of the People Carry Me by Miguel Hernandez. But there's a lot of Spanish.
Well, give it a shot.
Names in there, and I'm not sure how to pronounce, so I just apologize to the people of Spain. But this is a very, very powerful poem.
Right.
And it's by Miguel Hernandez. Translated by A.S. Klein. The winds of the people carry me. The winds of the people carry me. The winds of the people blow me on, scattering this heart of mine and readying my throat. Oxen bow their heads, impotently weak, at their punishment. Lions lift theirs at the same time punished with their clamorous claws. I am not from a race of oxen. I am from a race that holds the minds of lions, the passes of eagles, the ridges of bulls with pride in the horn. Oxen never prospered in the wastes of Spain. Who spoke of throwing a yoke over the neck of this race? Whoever yoked or hobbled a hurricane or kept a lightning bolt prisoner in a jail. Asturians of culture, Basques of armored song, stone, Valencians of happiness, and Castilians of soul, laboring like the earth graceful as wings. Andalusians of lightning born among the guitars and forged in torrential avenues, anvils of tears. Estimadorians of rye, Galatians of rain and calm, Catalans of firmness, Aragonese of lawn, musicians of dynamite, fruitfully multiplied, Leonese, Navarrese, masters of hunger, sweat in the axe, king of minerals, lords of the till soil, men who among the roots, like elegant roots, go from life to death, go from void to void. People of ill descent want you to put yokes on you, yokes you must leave broken across their backs. The twilight of the oxen is the point of daybreak. Oxens die humble, closed in the stink of stables. The eagles, the lions, the bulls die with pride, and behind them the sky is undarkened and endless. The agony of the oxen makes the spirit small, and that of the wild creature enhances all creation. If I am dying, let me die with my head held high, dead and 20 times dead, my mouth in the grass. I'll keep my teeth clenched and my chin resolute. Singing, I wait for death, for there are nightingales that sing above the fusillades and in the midst of battle.
that's
a poem of great defiance.
Oh, boy, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen that one before. It's a very interesting... And actually, it's true. All the names of the lightning guitars, the tears, the Rye, the Calm, the Mass, all those are names of provinces of Spain, I guess different sub-nationalities, actually, because it's a very complex history, as you probably know.
Yeah, it's a call for all of Spain to unite and resist.
Right.
Be proud.
Well, it's they're still struggling with that to a certain extent. That was pretty clear when we were there. Maybe mostly because we were in most of the time in Barcelona, which is, I think they had a separatist movement going on there to a certain extent. Although our taxi driver didn't think it was going to succeed. That was interesting, you know, but... I had one that I was thinking about doing here. But... we did the book burning... Oh, I liked the one, The Burial of the Agitator in a Zinc Coffin.
Sure, read that. That's a poem for you, John.
That's right. Some of my brothers, you know, it kind of ended up like this. Anyway, this is another 1938 poem by Bertolt Brecht, directed at the Hitler regime. Anyway, it's called Burial of the Agitator in a Zinc Coffin. Here, in this zinc coffin, lies a dead man, or else his leg and his head, or still less of him, or nothing at all, since he was an agitator. He has been identified as the primary cause of evil. Shove him under the earth. At most, only his wife will accompany him to the carrion pit, since whoever goes with him is also a marked man. What lies in the zinc coffin was agitated in favor of many things, for eating your fill, for a roof over your head, for feeding your children, for holding out for the last penny, for solidarity with all the oppressed who are like you and in favor of thinking. And what lies in the zinc coffin has said that another economic system was necessary and that you, the massed millions of labor, must take over the leadership. Otherwise, the future will hold nothing better for you. And because of that, what is in the zinc coffin has said this. It ended in the zinc coffin and must be shoved under the earth. And as an agitator who incited you to unrest, and whichever of you speaks of eating his fill, and whichever of you wants a roof over his head, and whichever of you holds out for the last penny, and whichever of you wants to feed his children, and whichever of you thinks and proclaims his solidarity with all who are oppressed, he shall from now until eternity end in the zinc coffin, like this man here, as an agitator, and be shoved under the earth.
Well, that one doesn't pull any punches.
No. No. Well, I mean, you know, his poems from that era are like that. I mean, they're like calls to battle. So he was very closely affiliated with the communist movement, and especially in the 30s, and actually into the through the war. So it bears that mark, but it shows you it shows you some of the spirit involved in some of those people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I think we've gotten to a solid half hour of poems here, Janet. Do you have another one you'd like to do, or do you want to close it off?
Well, I could read Letter to Aragon, or we could close it off, either one.
Oh, let's do that. Letter to Aragon. Yeah, that's a good
note. Okay, this is by Rupert John Cornford, but he went by John Crawford. He didn't use Rupert. He was named after Rupert Brooke. And it's called A Letter from Aragon. And he actually fought. He was an Englishman, and he fought in the war. He recruited, and he also fought in the war against Franco. And this poem is called A Letter from Aragon. This is a quiet sector of a quiet front. We buried Ruiz in a new pine coffin, but the shroud was too small, and his washed feet stuck out. The stink of his corpse came through the clean pine boards, and some of the bearers wrapped handkerchiefs around their faces. Death was not dignified. We hacked a ragged grave in the unfriendly earth and fired a ragged volley over the grave. You could tell from our listlessness nobody missed him much. This is a quiet sector of a quiet front. No poison gas and no HE. When they shelled the other end of the village and the streets were choked with dust, women came screaming out of the crumbling houses, clutched under one arm the naked rump of an insect. I thought how ugly fear is. This is a quiet section of a quiet front. Our nerves are steady. We all sleep soundly. In the clean hospital bed, my eyes were so heavy, sleep easily blotted out one ugly picture. A wounded militiaman moaning on the stretcher, now out of danger, but still crying for water. Strong against death, but unprepared for such pain. This is a quiet front. But when I shook hands to leave, an anarchist worker said, "Tell the workers of England, there was a war not of our, this was a war not of our own making. We did not seek it. But if ever the fascists again rule Barcelona, it will be as a heap of ruins with us workers beneath it."
Wow. Well, you know, Barcelona was very active with demonstrations and performances in the squares and circles, you know, so. Very bustling, a lot of activity, a lot of young people, too. Anyway, but thank you. I think that's it's good to have a little, you know, sort of bull-throated kind of set of poems on around a sort of theme, and you know, see how it works. So I enjoyed doing this. I felt moved by the poems. So I'm glad that you put up with, you know, my trip to Spain, you know, probably tainting everything. But anyway, do you have any? I guess we're talking about a different theme for next week, right? You had some thoughts.
Yes, I was thinking about doing poems of hope and resilience.
Oh, that's right.
It's something that we need to hold on to. The world seems to be crashing around us, but one has to hold on to love. One has to hold on to friendship. One has to believe in hope, and one has to believe in resilience.
Okay. Well, and then have resilience. After you believe in it, then there's a demonstration that always takes place. Anyway, well, thank you so much, Janet. Okay, everybody, take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next, and we'll see you next Wednesday. On around 10 a.m., maybe a little, we might start recording a little earlier, depending on people's schedules and stuff. Until then, take care.
Thank you.